Burke with BangTheBook.com and Bang the Book Radio. Adam, a pleasure as always to have you on, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing well, Andy. How about you?
Not too bad. So far, so good. And I know this is a time of the year that's always very exciting for you and probably at the same time very relieving to you as well to know that the Major League Baseball betting guide is over and done with. And I know there's certainly a lot of layers to that project, and it's certainly one of your favorite ones of the year.
Yeah, I like to call this my labor of love. It's very labor-intensive. I put a lot into it. I've got team previews for all 30 teams over at bangthebook.com. I've got 9 additional team futures odds looks with the World Series, the 2 pennants, and then all 6 divisions. Also do individual player futures for the Cy Young in both leagues, the MVP in both leagues, and the player that's going to lead Major League Baseball in home runs. So it's a lot of words. It's actually a 250-page PDF document to get you fully ready for the Major League Baseball season. It's very in-depth. It's very detailed, but it's good for bettors. It's good for fans. It's good for fantasy players. It helps out a lot of people, and it's a great resource for me as I get ready for the season, too.
Which isn't that far away, just about 5 weeks out from the start of the season. Hard to believe that it's that close, and well, the sun's out right now, but the temperature's not even close to being conducive to playing Major League Baseball games, but we'll save that for a different time. We have different ways of getting into this Major League Baseball betting guide, so we'll kind of take it one at a time here, and we'll begin today by previewing your Major League Baseball win total primer. What are some things that we need to know heading into the opening stages of spring training with Cactus League games starting up tomorrow?
So there are a lot of layers to each team preview. I mean, I take a look back at what happened last year. I take a look at the actual records and compare them to some of the alternate standings metrics that are out there, like Pythagorean win-loss, like base runs, like third-order win percentage, which is over at Baseball Prospectus. And what I'm looking for with those, I'm looking for teams that are just kind of inherently in line for positive or negative regression, no matter who they added this season. If they got very lucky in one-run games, I factor that into the equation. If they got very lucky with runners in scoring position or very unlucky with runners in scoring position, I factor that into the equation. I look at all the additions and subtractions from the flurry of transactions over the offseason. And I look at an individual player level to see if there's positive or negative regression based on what happened last year, if guys were a lot better than their career averages. And, of course, as we know last season, I mean, the baseball was spring-loaded. I mean, it flew out of the ballpark. We had several teams that broke the previous record for most home runs in a season. We had 4 teams that gave up the most home runs in a season led by the Baltimore Orioles. So kind of look at some of that stuff, too, and look at how what I think was an offensive outlier from a home run standpoint could positively or negatively impact some of these teams this year.
We'll come back around to some of that stuff in future episodes because, you know, there's just so much to dive into there, and we'll have plenty of chances to do that before the season begins. And in a moment, we'll get into the importance of some of the statistics to know while handicapping the game. But I want to begin with something that's a little bit off the wall, and it picked up some steam earlier this week. There are actually odds on how many times the Astros are going to get plunked this season. What do you make of all this?
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. I mean, you know, we know that based on the sound bites that the players have had around the league that, you know, they're not real thrilled with how MLB came down or, you know, didn't even really come down on the Astros players themselves. There were some, you know, organizational things with the firing of the letting go of AJ Hinch, the letting go of Jeff Luhnow, some draft picks, stuff like that. There's sort of this sentiment out there that maybe the players will take care of it themselves. And you know, I've seen this line out there as high as 83.5 for over-under hit-by-pitches of the Astros team this season. And I got to tell you, Andy, if we go all the way back to the 1980 season, there are only 32 individual team seasons in which a team has been hit 84 or more times by pitches. A lot of them here are in the 2000s as, you know, teams are pitching in a little bit more. Something I didn't fully realize, and in fact, this one's pretty interesting to me here, you know, the team that's been hit the most by pitches dating back to 1980, the 2008 Cleveland Indians, which I never would have thought to be the case, led by Ryan Garko, who was hit 15 times that year.
Wow. And, of course, that was the year after they nearly made it to the World Series. Came just a game away from getting past the Red Sox for the opportunity to play the Rockies. So, interesting. Now, I'm very fascinated to see how this is going to be handled in spring training and especially the early stages of the season. Now, I haven't really examined the Astros' schedule early on, but I think if you're going to see any of this, it's going to happen pretty quickly. Baseball's great about policing itself, but I think the Astros are kidding themselves that they don't think they're going to wear a few throughout the course of the season. Certain teams seem to have taken this a little more personally than others with the way they believe that they were cheated. But I'm really interested to see how this is policed early on, because Rob Manfred has come out and said that there will be disciplinary action, although I think he can't be naive enough to think that they're not going to get thrown at intentionally at least a little bit early on, no?
Yeah, this is going to be a really strange dynamic because, you know, Major League Baseball has already said, look, you know, we don't want you to take retribution into your own hands. And as you said, players are going to do that. The thing is, when you're suspended, you don't get paid. So, you know, there are already a lot of guys out there that are upset at, you know, what this may have done in terms of arbitration cases, in terms of guys, you know, making it to the major leagues and then never being there again. And just in terms of, you know, the monetary loss that players have already experienced, are they willing to take on that much more getting suspended? And something else that's going to be interesting for me to follow, and I do like Houston over their season win total a little bit just because I think this is still a very, very good team and probably the best or second best offense in the American League. In spring training here, what's to stop some double-A guy from throwing at Alex Bregman or throwing at Carlos Correa, and maybe Bregman breaks a wrist or Correa breaks a finger or two, something like that? You know, some of these young guys in spring training, they're going to try and drive up that clout meter a little bit, you know, with their teams, with the players in that clubhouse. I'd be very, very careful with any sort of Houston futures involvement just because I don't know if their guys are going to get through spring training healthy when guys with nothing to lose can throw at them.
Yeah, that's a very interesting point. Again, we're talking with Adam Burke with BangTheBook.com and Bang the Book Radio. Make sure you check out that Major League Baseball betting guide. It's available over at BangTheBook.com. All right, one of the things that you detail here is the important statistics to know for handicapping baseball. And I think you could certainly stretch that out beyond just handicapping baseball, because you have all these new measures of metrics. And I think people have a very difficult time breaking these down and applying them to find out which ones are important and which ones maybe not so much. So if you can, just kind of explain the importance of the ones that really kind of come to the forefront for you.
Yeah, I just think for the most part that a lot of these sabermetric statistics are either enhancements of what already exists or a good way of quantifying what we can see with our eyes. And I will say that most of my season win total content is very heavy into the metrics, into a lot of the advanced analytics. So if you're somebody who wants to learn about those, it's also a really good application of them. For example, one of my favorite statistics is called WOBA, weighted on base average. You know, on base percentage just treats everything as equal. A walk is the same as a single is the same as a home run. You know, a home run is the same as a hit by pitch. We know that not to be the case. So what WOBA does, weighted on base average, is it assigns a weighted value to each way of reaching base. So a home run is more valuable than a single. A double is more valuable than a walk, much like they would be over the case of a regular game. So I think weighted on base average is probably my favorite sabermetric statistic. It's one of the more basic ones to figure out because, like I said, it's an on-base percentage variant that just weights the more important outcomes in a heavier way. And that obviously just makes a lot of sense. I think it's very logical in a lot of ways. So I do use that for both hitters and pitchers. Another one that I think is very good is called Weighted Runs Created Plus. This is abbreviated WRC Plus, where 100 is league average. So basically, this is a metric that is both park and league adjusted, because as we know, in the National League, the pitchers are still batting for God knows what reason. And it's park adjusted because some parks are better to hit in than others. So what this metric does basically is it shows you how much above average or below average a hitter's performance is, using those adjustments to come up with the formula. So that's another very basic one to where you can say, okay, I know this guy's really good, but how good is he? Well, maybe he's 10% better than league average. Maybe he's 15% better than league average. WOBA and WRC Plus are two of the more introductory sabermetric stats that I use a lot in these team previews, and I think they're things that are pretty easy for everybody to understand.
Along those same lines, there is a traditional statistic that you absolutely hate. And there are other substitutes that you put in there as well in the article that you detailed, talking about all of these different statistics and these metrics that are at our disposal now. So please explain why you hate the traditional earned run average.
Yeah, I do not like ERA at all. And a primary reason for that is because a lot of things are out of a pitcher's control. And I don't think that it's necessarily good to evaluate them by a statistic like ERA, where defense comes into play, where park factor obviously comes into play, where timing comes into play. You know, some guys just have a really good season and get very lucky because they stranded a lot of runners. So they're going to have a lower ERA. Other guys who may be better pitchers, we'll use Chris Sale as an example. Chris Sale last year had an ERA up in the 450 range. Nobody thinks that Chris Sale is a bad pitcher. And if you do, well, you're probably not watching the same game that I am. Chris Sale, some of his alternate metrics like FIP, fielding independent pitching, and XFIP, which is fielder independent pitching, assuming a league average home run to fly ball percentage, said that Chris Sale was actually pretty good. He struck out 218 guys in 147 and a third innings. The problem was he didn't strand enough runners. He only stranded two-thirds of his runners. So what that does is it drives up his ERA. Is that his fault? Maybe. You could argue that it is. But maybe it isn't. Maybe an outfielder didn't get to a ball that he should have. Maybe a ground ball leaked through that, you know, had 75 miles per hour of exit velocity off the bat. ERA doesn't account for any of those things. So I think there are just better metrics out there that really evaluate a pitcher's true talent level. And I don't think that ERA is one of them, because once that pitch leaves his hand, he has nothing else to do with the outcome.
I encourage all of you to head to bangthebook.com. Check out that Major League Baseball betting guide. There are a lot of great articles on there that deal with this, explaining the important stats to know when you're handicapping baseball. And I know many of you may actually dive into that here pretty quickly with the Cactus League games getting going tomorrow. Adam, we transition now into college basketball, really kind of heading down the home stretch here with just a couple of weekends left in February before we get into March, which will be loaded to the gills with not only those conference tournaments, but also the big dance a little bit less than a month away. Which college games do you like this weekend?
Yeah, I believe there are four conference tournaments that start March 3rd. So we're not that far away from the college basketball postseason. What that means is that this is the last week of the regular season for a lot of the smaller conferences. Got about 2 weeks left in most of the bigger conferences. And there are a few big games here this weekend. Obviously, the one that everyone's going to be talking about on Saturday is actually one of the earliest games, an 11 a.m. local time tip-off down in Waco between Kansas and Baylor. Baylor, a short favorite in this game. They beat Kansas on the road at Fog Allen Fieldhouse earlier on in the year. So Kansas out for revenge, Baylor out to protect its perfect record in Big 12 play. Couple of top five teams here. Massive game in this one. I do like Baylor a little bit in this spot here. Villanova and Xavier's a pretty good game. Villanova, you know, with a coach like Jay Wright, you expect the Wildcats to really round into form as we head into March here. But this is actually their third straight road game, technically. They were on the road at Temple last Sunday, which is still in the city of Philadelphia. But hostile environments and three straight games here for Villanova. I think that's a pretty tough spot down in Cincinnati coming up here on Saturday. UCLA, I think, gets blown out in a big way by Colorado tomorrow. It's very, very hard when you play Utah and Colorado back-to-back. It's even harder when you do it within the span of 40 hours because you've got back-to-back games in altitude. That second game in altitude, always more difficult. Colorado on the opening number here, only -10.5 against UCLA. I think they completely blow the Bruins out. And one more game on Saturday here real quickly, Gonzaga and BYU. You know, BYU is absolutely shooting the lights out this season. They're number one in the country in three-point percentage. They were a 13-point underdog at Gonzaga in the first game and lost by 23. I think people are going to try really, really hard to get BYU in a position where they can upset Gonzaga here. That will probably be the narrative throughout Saturday. I just don't see it. I think Gonzaga is way too good. I think Gonzaga wins that game and does so comfortably.
Great, great stuff. Adam, as always, we appreciate the time. Thank you so much for joining us, and